This is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. I'm Gabe Neitzel from ESPN Milwaukee, along with Brian Roach from ESPN West Palm. Jonathan Hood off this week, but again, always check him out. You can always hear his wrestling opinions Sunday mornings, part of SiriusXM Pro Wrestling Nation from 9 a.m. until noon Eastern time. Building up towards Double or Nothing in AEW, building up towards Backlash in WWE. But where we begin the show today, Brian, and I think it's probably because of a text I sent you last night. So it's pretty obvious of where I stand. MJF, I think, is having a tremendous run. Even though he is no longer the world champ, I think he is still the most must-see thing, a part of AEW right now. And the text I sent, in full disclosure, was, all right, that's it. MJF should be number one in the PWI 500 when that comes out later this summer. So let's go ahead and dive into MJF. Is he the number one guy right now in professional wrestling? Is he the wrestler of the year?
Yeah, and it's hard to argue where everything he touches is gold right now. Like, last night you had the belief, like, okay, he's going to win the TNT title, we're doing this. He doesn't, and you're like, okay, that's fine also. Not where it's like, oh, it didn't go the way we expected, now it's ruined. It's like, all right, let's see what he's going to do. Everything he's touching, we talk about AEW being hot right now and everything clicking, that is a direct reflection of him as the world champion, as him at top of the card, doing everything. And wherever this goes, whether it be him winning the title back at the end of the month, whether somehow he doesn't win the title, I trust that whatever he's going to do is going to work. He's got it on the mic. He's got it in the ring. I don't see any holes in his game at this point.
That's and that was what I was thinking last night, is there's no holes in his game, right? Like, anybody else that you would put up for a nomination for this, I guess Cody would be up there. I think it's been a kind of an inconsistent year for Cody. And part of that storytelling, part of that's the weird title change they did with Drew McIntyre, and then he got it back all straight. Like, it wasn't smooth. CM Punk, I would argue, is probably the best wrestler in WWE this year. But at the same time, like, he's getting a little bit older. And while I think he had a tremendous match with Roman Reigns, and he's had some pretty good matches leading up to that, like, he's not doing what MJF is doing week in and week out. Like, CM Punk, again, I don't think they have anything for him right now, as they kind of, you know, hinted towards him potentially going up, you know, against Cody Rhodes. I don't think that, you know, he's doing what MJF is doing week in and week out, because MJF is out there. He's cutting the best promos. He's putting on maybe not the best matches, you know, but fantastic matches. Like, he is, last night was so much fun and a way to kick off the show. And again, you're expecting him to win because Darby Allin saying, hey, you got to have something to put on the line in order for me to face you against. You're thinking, oh, that thing is going to be the TNT championship. And that's not it. So now I'm intrigued. Okay, what's that thing that MJF is going to put on the line? And he's cutting great promos. Like, there's nothing he cannot do right now. And whatever he's doing, as you said, is just has me fascinated, which is why, you know, again, he's above Roman right now. He's above Punk. He's above Cody. He's, you know, Will Ospreay, I think they're doing some interesting stuff with him and the Death Riders, but that story's just starting. And Will has been, you know, been injured much of this past year as well. So I think that MJF, I'm not even sure if it's particularly close. I think he's the wrestler.
Yeah, I don't know. Like you said, Punk, Cody, maybe, like, number two is not close. Even the little stuff where, like, the Kevin Knight promo last week, I think it was last week. Yeah.
Last week.
They're in the ring. Kevin Knight, we know, is the future. We know what he can do in the ring. He's not there yet on the mic. MJF's going to run laps around a lot of people in the ring. But that interaction last week where MJF does the MJF things without totally embarrassing him. We've talked a lot on this show about how John Cena essentially ended Austin Theory on the mic. Those two are on different levels, and instead of trying to bring Theory up, Cena's like, all right, that's enough of you, and we don't look at Theory the same anymore. That didn't happen last week. MJF did bring Kevin Knight up a little, and he still did his thing, and it added to the intrigue last night. He makes everyone around him better. Like, he made Darby a world champion. We had that debate where it's like, oh, does he actually want that belt? Now, because of the MJF involvement, we're like, oh, yeah, that works, and this feud is working, and things like that. Everything he's touching is just gold at this point, and it's unbelievable to watch.
I mean, that's the rare quality, that you're bringing people along with you, right? And I think, and maybe earlier in his career, as good as MJF has been, like when he was earlier and younger in that first world championship run, I don't think he was necessarily doing that, which is why I think they kind of got lost with the him and Adam Cole stuff. While fun, again, I bring this up way too much probably, but your world championship took a backseat to the tag titles of your secondary brand. Yep. Not even the tag titles of your brand, the tag titles of your secondary brand. So that's certainly not the case this time around with MJF. And again, usually with MJF, there's been some sort of faction around him. There's been the heater next to, you know, when you think of Wardlow, and then they had the great, you know, match with Ward with that, or it was Adam Cole there for a while. Like him being on his own and doing this on his own two feet, bringing people along with him, elevating everything around him. That's, I think that's pretty rare in pro wrestling, and you don't get to see it all that often. And very rarely are guys on heaters like that where everything they touch is good. And that's what he's doing right now.
We talked about it with like a guy like Punk, where, you know, the cliche is you put him in the ring with a broomstick, he's going to have a 5-star match. MJF is that way with stories now. I trust that anyone who put in a storyline with MJF is going to come out looking better on the other end, and we're going to be intrigued by it.
Well, and that's, I don't want to make it seem like I was knocking him by saying he's not having the best match, because he's having fantastic matches. Yes. The cutter he pulled out of nowhere against Kevin Knight last night was fantastic. Like, he's, again, is he Kenny Omega in his prime? No, but that doesn't mean he's not a really good in-ring performer. And I think that's only gotten stronger. Not just his in-ring ability, but the storytelling that he's doing in the ring as well. Taking the low blow then yesterday, eating the pin, making things just so much more intriguing for him as a character. And, like, again, it's just, it's all falling into place for him right now. And, like, it's kind of a bummer because he's going to get the world championship back, I think, from Darby at Double or Nothing. And then he's probably dropping it to Ospreay, who's at that point a member of the Death Riders, I guess. I'm not sure, but I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by what the hell's going on over there, certainly. And if, or maybe not, or maybe we just sprint past that and MJF still continues to take that championship into, you know, the back half of 2026. They could really do anything with MJF, because does he need the championship? No, but it feels like he should have it as the best guy in the promotion.
And it's funny, we talk about the wrestling stuff, like him not being Kenny or not being Ospreay, like, isn't a knock on him? And I think it almost helps him stand out more in AEW, because the top of that card wrestling-wise, there are so many studs that MJF being really good is good and like stands out in the way he tells the story. And I think it just adds to who he is.
Yeah. And again, it's a different match that he had to have. I go back to, yes, he's been squashed twice, but like the first time, like we did not see it coming with, you know, the way that he lost to Brody King. And he gets distracted, and him just flailing as his legs are out from underneath him, like, is an image I'll remember. But then he goes on and puts on a classic match, a great match with Brody King, and then has a great match last night with a different style in Kevin Knight. So it's not just, oh, MJF has, no, he's morphing to the talent that he's in the ring with, which again is a sign of a great in-ring performer.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we can't say it enough, like AEW being where they are right now, having all the buzz around them, I think is a reflection of him. It is the top. It is the leader. It is the MVP of the clubhouse. Whatever sports cliche you want to use, he sets the tone, and I think that's why AEW is where they are right now.
Yeah, last night was a fantastic show. And again, he, even though he loses the match, he pops up later in the show. Like he is the through line. Much like, again, I think that's just, you know, the Bloodline kicking off Raw on Monday. Bloodline then closes the show on Monday with Roman Reigns. It's that through line of the show where he's kind of popping up all over the place because, again, why wouldn't you want a guy that talented to be the main part of just about everything you're doing?
And I think that's a good comparison also, where like the Bloodline and A-plus story, but WWE, where they are creatively, it's like, we don't know what to do. Let's just run that back. Like, you know, this is a Bloodline story again. We're getting the same sort of stuff.
Yeah.
MJF is different. Like, this isn't just, I'm better than you and I know it. This is him desperate. This is him trying for the title. Like, we see different angles and different sides of him that we're not just playing repeats and playing the hits, which adds to the story.
Yeah. And so I don't think it's close. I guess we'll have to wait and see how PWI sees it when it comes out later this summer. But I again, looking through the list, I don't think he's ever been a top five guy, which seems odd. I was kind of scrolling through that last night a little bit on the PWI list. I think he's made that jump. I think he's got to be the wrestler.
So who is number two?
Ooh. Probably Punk.
Yeah. Like he did the bronze.
Because again, he picked up the ball and ran with it after, you know, after Rollins had the injury and he took that world championship and had some great matches, right? And in the run up to Roman, like Roman's what wrestled twice in 2026. He wrestled the Rumble and then the main event. Like and now he's around more. He's at least cutting promos, which is great. But MJF is showing up cutting promos, wrestling on the television, wrestling in the pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Hangman hasn't been around for a while now. We finally got to see Swerve pop up again last night.
The Cody stuff, I feel like
I'm trying to think who else.
And yeah, I don't really know who else there is.
Yeah, I think that's, at least on the men's side, like that's to me MJF, and I don't think it's close. Okay. And I don't think it's clear because, again, we can't even figure out who's number two. Like that tells the entire story to me, at least as far as MJF goes. All right, let's dive into the other top three stories in the world of professional wrestling. Brian, we call it the three count here on GKW. What do we have at number one?
One thing we often see post WrestleMania, WWE releases hitting the news this week. Kairi Sane, Aleister Black, Zelina Vega, Uncle Howdy, Nikki Cross, Motor City Machine Gun, some of the names released this week from the WWE. Which one surprised you the most?
I think the ones that surprised me the most were Aleister Black and Kairi Sane, because they were involved in seemingly prominent storylines. Like Aleister was consistently popping up on SmackDown, you know, again, trying to play head games with different people, the latest being Sami Zayn, you know, trying to prove that he's not the good guy he thinks he is and trying to make more of a heel. And again, I joked that I thought that Kairi was going to be on the line of won a WrestleMania match that didn't happen between Asuka and Io Sky. It felt like they could have fought, and then Kairi ends up, you know, turning, you know, Io wins. She can finally turn face and hang out with Io, and they can kind of run roughshod over some people. So I guess those would be the top two for me that were the most surprising, just because it seemed like they were still being prominently featured on WWE. Yeah,
Kairi was part of a women's storyline that didn't involve titles, that was, you know, prominent, that involved a lot of different pieces. And then they get rid of her. And I think that just sort of shows the TKO mindset where it's a name, it's a number, and like they're not even involved with the day to day. It's like, oh, this person makes a lot and we don't use them enough. Like, okay, they can go. So that one to me was without a doubt the most surprising one, where that payoff would have been awesome. Like her, that face turn, it was building, it was bubbling.
Oh,
and we
just
don't get it now, which is baffling. The rest, I guess I'm sort of surprised with the Uncle Howdy part. Like, it felt like that was something where maybe they'd be loyal to Bray, where the storyline, yes, like, it was cool the way it started. It hasn't really been working on TV. But you could probably still do something just to honor Bray, you know, once a month or something.
Well, and that's, I guess, those releases of getting rid of the Wyatt Six, it just feels gross. Like, okay, we're just going to try to capitalize on Bray's death for as long as we can. Oh, we can't capitalize on his death anymore. All right, see you later. Right. Like, it's just kind of, but again, that's the TKO kind of corporate mindset, right? Like, oh, okay, we can't really use this the way we want to, so we'll see you later. You know, we were able to do the Bray Wyatt tribute for as long as we could, and it just kind of feels like gross taking advantage of, you know, one of your performers, one of your more beloved performers' deaths. And yeah, so it just kind of felt weird. And the way that all of those performers that were a part of the Wyatt Six, kind of some of the interviews they've given, some of the quotes I've seen since their release, you know, how much it was very personal to all of them and how much they felt Bray when they were coming out to the ring anytime that they were coming out. It's, I think that one makes me the most disappointed. Again, I'm not shocked that that one, again, seeing the long list of people that were released, the Wyatt Six certainly weren't shocking. It just doesn't, that one makes me feel the worst just because of the way it all ended up.
Yeah, I agree with that. And like, they are still so tightly knit. Eric Rowan, I saw him in Vegas, you know, at Brody Jr.'s final or first match, like being there for that. And they're also, and we've seen this now, you know, the Matt Cardona role is still open on the indies right now. Like, you go out there, you reinvent yourself. We might see them again in the WWE. Some of them, I think, are openly like, hey, I'm never going back. Aleister Black seems to be like a guy that AEW talent, very vocal about, we don't want him here. Like, he seemed to be a Triple H guy, and yet now he's looking for a job. So I always wonder how something like that works out. But, like, we're going to see them again. They're going to make names for themselves. Conveniently, Motor City Machine Guns, their 90-day non-compete, the week after that expires, AEW Dynamite in Detroit. So we might see them in Detroit.
Yeah, that one, again, that one's one that makes sense. But I don't see any other name there that I think is going to pop up in AEW. And it'd be kind of weird for any of them to pop up in TNA right now either after the 90-day compete because of the relationship that WWE has with TNA. And so I just don't know where ultimately some of these people go. I guess Santos Escobar could be popping up in CMLL, and then maybe we see him a little bit in AEW, especially with Forbidden Door and the relationship that AEW has with CMLL. So I think there are a couple in there that you can make I think Kairi Sane's probably just going to go back and wrestle in Japan. Like, I think there's some lines, some pretty obvious ones that you can draw, but I honestly don't know what's next for Aleister Black. I really don't, because he's now been fired from WWE twice. As you mentioned, AEW does not seem to be interested, at least the locker room. And I just don't know where you go from there. If you're him, obviously making indie appearances, maybe you can take that Matt Cardona role and be the guy that's going to go out there and grind. But again, it's not like he's a dude that's out there wrestling every week on television for AEW or WWE.
Yeah, that's the odd spot. And you mentioned the TNA part. I think that complicates things because it is one less option. Like, if you're signing with TNA, you're signing with the WWE. Like, that's just how it goes. And we have the interview on our page with Nick Nemeth. I caught up with in Vegas. He has talked about, like, having those options makes everyone better. He says he wishes when he was in the prime of his career, basically getting wasted in WWE, that there was another option. But there wasn't. So it's like, all right, I got to stay here in WWE because it's where I'm on television. It's where you're going to make the most money. The TNA relationship does take away one less option. And if you burn the AEW bridge, now all of a sudden you're like, hey, where do we find NWA on television or streaming now? Like, it's just odd.
And if we're being honest, the AEW roster is probably a little bloated too right now. Right? Like, they could probably afford it. Not that I'm advocating for people to lose jobs, but I mean, they've got 4 hours of television each week, and there's some really good performers over there that don't see the light of day.
Yeah, but then the weird part
that just haven't.
I don't know. Like, if you're a performer and the contracts are in front of you, obviously the zeros are there. It's hard to ignore. Some of these are just signings to spite AEW, and it goes both ways. Like, the Motor City Machine Guns, like, that was the shiny new toy. Hunter said, ha, we got them. We're going to put the belts on them. We're going to put them on TV. And it's like, all right, now we got them. Now what? Like, then they're not on TV anymore. So those weird things were, if you're talent, like, how do you see through something like that and be like, am I actually going to go there and just get a paycheck, or are they actually going to use me? Because a lot of times it feels like it's like, hey, we just want them so they don't have them.
But I think it's completely possible that the Motor City Machine Guns just make an appearance on AEW television, but aren't all elite.
I think that's fair.
Right? Like, just make a per appearance, you know, fee and maybe don't become all elite. Maybe just dominate. I have no idea. I mean, given some of the relationships that they have, it probably makes sense that AEW ultimately signs them. But, you know, I mean, tag teams just disappear for long stretches in AEW because they've got so many. They have a lot going on in AEW. And again, that's why I wouldn't rush to go out there and sign anyone. Motor City Machine Guns probably might make the most sense, but I don't think there's anybody else on that list that AEW is going, yep, we need to sign this person because they've got other people that they need to figure out in their own locker room.
So, like, looking over the name, like, Nikki Cross is someone I'm intrigued by. We've seen what she's able to do storyline-wise. But the way AEW is telling stories in the women's division right now, yes, there's plenty of people in the back. You're like, yeah, you should probably use them to where you don't really need that new toy. You don't need to bring someone in because you have people. Britt Baker supposedly still works at AEW. Like, it's her birthday last week.
They wished her a happy birthday. Like, what are we doing? On Twitter, hey, happy birthday, Britt Baker. Oh, she's still there?
So, like, maybe
put her on TV,
maybe
damn
that's
it.
Someone you use instead. So it is very odd. Like, the Zoe Starks of the world, Alba Fire, like, we saw what she was able to do, obviously being elevated by Chelsea. Go out there, bust her ass. Cardona puts it out there all the time where, I mean, even Cardona, like, he's the shiny new toy. We don't see him on television anymore.
No.
So
And I mean, he came back saying he wanted a shot at the WWE World Championship, and that ain't happening. Yeah. I mean, it's the crazy thing of the name, you just said it, like Zoe Stark, man, how far did she fall? I mean, she was in a pretty significant storyline with one of the most popular WWE women stars of all time, with Trish Stratus, and that just disappeared. Then it didn't help that Zoe got hurt, and then they didn't have anything for her. Apparently, she's been healthy for a little bit now, and they just didn't have any creative for her, so she's not on television, and that's it. She just goes away. Like, that's one I feel bad for, because it seemed like she had, like, she was starting to make that climb. That storyline cooled. She got a couple of other things, then got hurt, and that was
but
about it.
But honestly, for someone like that, like, the release almost helps a little bit. Yes, obviously it's not going to help financially, but with the lack of house shows, to go out there and work indie shows every Friday, every Saturday, to work, you know, 5 to 10 matches a month, you're not doing that in the WWE. And we've talked about that a lot. You're not able to get better by just sitting in the back, but now you go work the indies and you get become a better wrestler because of it.
Yeah, she's, if I had to predict one that I think would eventually make their way back, like could go out there and kill it on the indies or go kill it someplace else and make their way back to WWE, she's the one, I think. Just because, again, they told some significant storylines, and I think she could make her way back to WWE in two or three
years. I completely agree with that.
If she goes out there and kills it. All right, what do we got at number two?
We are about a week away from WWE Backlash. Three matches announced so far. Roman Reigns versus Jacob Fatu for the world title. Asuka versus Io Sky, because they forgot to put it on Mania. And Seth Rollins versus Bron Breakker. Could Backlash be better than WrestleMania Night 1?
I mean, it already is, isn't it? I mean, first of all, Io and Asuka, like, as long as they give that, we're probably only two matches away from filling out the card, because they typically go with five on, you know, the non-double night, you know, PLEs for WWE. I got to imagine, because there's only five, that Asuka and Io are going to get time. Like, that's going to...
Hopefully?
That's probably going to be the match of the night, and probably better than anything in-ring that we saw in WrestleMania Night 1.
I just always concerned about whether they're actually going to give it to him, or if it's 2.5 hours, an hour and a half for commercials, a Roman entrance for 30 minutes, and it's like, all right, here's what you got.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's TKO's forgetting the rule that WWE forgot for such a long time, that wrestling fans actually do enjoy wrestling.
Weird how that works.
You know, yes, the storylines are important, but you do need to, you know, actually put on wrestling every once in a while, since that's the product that you actually have. So I'm hoping, I think they should get a lot of time, just because I don't think Roman and Fatu is going to be a long match. I think it's going to be a high octane match. I think it's going to be a really intense match, but I think the best way to tell that story is by doing it quickly. Like having Fatu either, like, I mean, I'm honestly, he's not going to win. So, like, tiring himself out because it means so much to him, and he comes firing out of the gate and he just expends too much energy early, and Roman's able to kind of take care of business there. And Braun versus Seth, I think, is going to be fantastic. I think it's going to be tremendous. So the three that they've announced, I don't know what the other two are going to be. But yeah, I think it already is better than WrestleMania Night. Well, again, not a high bar to clear. But I think,
also just the three of them, like, storyline-wise, like, they're all great stories. Like, I was going to put in a match of the week. Braun's promo on Monday was the best of his career. Like, he stood there toe-to-toe. Mm-hmm. He did his thing in the ring, on the mic. We'll see what happens in the ring. I do agree. I think it's going to be a good match. But we thought him and Punk was going to be good, and it sort of underwhelmed. So this is another opportunity for him to show that he can be the main event star that everyone thinks he can be. But these are great stories we're getting right now, which is just weird to say for the post-Mania show, that it's just sort of a thrown together glorified house show. So I'm baffled by that part of it.
So the longest match we got on Mania Night 1 was the main event. Rhodes and Orton went almost 23 minutes. Will we get any matches on Backlash that go over that?
Rollins and Braun, I don't think Braun's a 20-minute guy. Like, Io and Asuka on paper should
probably not.
They don't do that with their women's matches.
No. That one should get the most time. It's not going to be the main event, and I understand why it's not going to be the main event. Roman's on the card. He's got a championship. That makes sense. It's the main event. The women's match does not have a title involved. It doesn't even have a Kairi Sane and a friend involved. But I still think that just give us what we want. Like, just let them – but if they don't go for 20 minutes, like I think that's just a massive failure of Backlash.
No, I agree.
Like, because I don't know what they could add to this card even. I mean, I know – I'm trying to think what they could even put on there.
You got the Open Challenge that he talked about this week. Maybe you throw that on there.
Sure, but that's going to be a squash. Like anything with Oba, can't go long. Because, again, it's the formula for a Brock losing a match. He goes out first. He loses quickly. But if you're building the story with Oba and he beat Brock in less than 6 minutes or whatever it was, like you can't have any other long matches with Oba without kind of diminishing Brock, especially if you end up bringing back Brock and he gets retired by Gunther. I know that's still the rumor out there. Whether or not it actually happens, who the hell knows? But like that diminishes that. So I think anything that Oba does is going to have to be a squash. So that's not going to take a ton of time. The other two men's matches that we already have on there aren't going to take a ton of time.
The only other stuff I can think of being added is you throw together a Rhea or a Liv title defense, or do they run back Trick and Sammy?
I mean, it seems like they're running back Trick and Sammy. So I think you put that on there. But again, that's not going to be a long match either. So I think you got to give Asuka and Io 20 minutes. If it doesn't, then I leave the door open for maybe WrestleMania Night 1 being as good or better.
Yeah.
Because again, we still got Seth and Gunther, which was good in ring and good storytelling. Not much else, but on that card. But at least, again, that got a little bit of time. It almost got 20 minutes. You gave 20 minutes to the main event. Like, you got to give something 20 minutes on this card if it's only going to be five deep. And that's the one that makes the most sense from a storyline perspective, from the two talents that we know can deliver in ring perspective. Give that baby time to breathe.
The funny thing is, like, based on the way TKO thinks about things, I think they count it all. Like, when we see match time, we're talking bell to bell. I think they count the entrance and theatrics and all that stuff as part of the experience. Where it's like, oh, you got 35 minutes of Roman and Fatu. Ignore the fact that 31 minutes was Roman walking in the ring. But it's like, hey, that's over a half hour. Like, that, I think, is how they look at things now.
And that's unfortunate, right? Like, but again, I think people being vocal, if that's indeed what happens and we continue to get matches that have too many commercials and the wrestling, like people just continue to be vocal about it, right? Like that's WWE's got to learn again. In the mid 2010s, they kind of got away from a lot of wrestling. It was a lot of promos and commercials and entrances. And then they started to come back because they started putting more wrestling on TV, right? Like more fans started coming back because again, you have to mix both. The stories are important. And it's one of the questions we love to ask Brian, you know, of wrestlers who come on here, like, you know, what's more important, in-ring, storytelling, and a lot of them lean towards storytelling. We've had a lot of women tell us that, the championship's not really important. I want to sell something that's really important in stories. But at the same time, like, it's a mixture of the two. It's not like, just because storytelling's more important than, you know, or they find it more important than the in-ring work, doesn't mean it's still not important. Like you still have to ultimately the story, the finality of the story, the closure of these stories happens in between the ropes. And that still needs to be significant. Otherwise, much like other TV shows that have had bad endings to stories, they get forgotten. You need to nail the finish of the story, which happens.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea Green has said on the show how she cares about stories. We've seen what she does with stories where she hasn't wrestled a match in months because she's been injured, but she's still on TV. She's still prominent. She's still entertaining. But then also the minute she wins that big title and has that big moment, that is going to be something that fans go nuts for because it's happening in the ring. Like that's a moment.
Just like she did. Yeah, just like she did when she won the U.S. title. Like that was such a huge moment and a great match, by the way, and a huge moment for her to win. And because it feels satisfying to watch the ebbs and flows and ups and downs of that match, it makes it more satisfying when you do win that championship or get your hand raised. You know, it all works together, which unfortunately TKO seemingly is forgetting about, even though they've signed Triple H now to some sort of extension.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Brian Alvarez threw up this week. There was some talk backstage about whether or not he was almost fed up and ready to walk out and be done with it all when his contract expired. but now apparently a multi-year deal to stick around and be the face of it all. Like, I think he's almost getting a pass on some things. We're like, oh, it's TKO, Hunter didn't screw that up. But then also still getting the hate of like, well, how come you let this happen? Or how come you didn't get in the way of that? So it's a weird spot for him.
Well, it's pretty obvious when TKO involves themselves, right? Like, that's the thing. So I think it's easy as a fan to go, oh, yeah, like he was just straddled with the McAfee jelly roll right. stuff. Like, that was just, and again, Jelly Roll, Hood and I talked about this last week, Brian, like Jelly Roll constantly being the voice of reason. Like, you know, like, thank God he's around, because he's got to be the one to raise his hand when he's having a match going, I don't think I should win this. I should lose this. Grateful to be here. Love what you guys do. And that's why I can't win this. And then him, you know, just, you know, he was the first one to say, like, I just wanted to get the hell out of the way. Like, I just wanted to get my stuff done and get the hell out of the way, because it's WrestleMania. Yeah. It's a main event. I don't belong here. So luckily Jelly Roll ends up being the voice of reason sometimes. But again, it's pretty obvious when TKO butts in and tries to do things and get Travis Scott involved and all these different things that have happened around Mania and Cody in the last couple of years.
It's just weird to see it all play out. I mean, we'll see what happens Backlash. And then I already know where we have another one before SummerSlam, I assume, right?
Oh, Money in the Banks before SummerSlam. Yeah. You got, yeah.
This is an opportunity to sort of swing back. Like, it feels like TK almost steps back non-Mania. So now if you're Hunter, take advantage. Let the wrestlers work. Let them wrestle. And then just go from there and, you know, win the fans over that way.
Yeah, 100%. What's number three this week?
Oh, we also have a clash in Italy. Don't forget about that one.
Yeah, well, they always have so many of these international ones now. Like, it's hard to keep it. It's, and again, I'm not, you know, Night of Champions, I think, by the way, is also supposed to be before SummerSlam.
That's June. Clash in Italy is May 31st. So that's literally 2 or 3 weeks after. So I don't even know if we consider that a pay-per-view.
It's just a house show that they put on television. Like the old roadblock that I like to bring up, because I thought that somehow Dean Ambrose was actually going to win the championship from Triple
H. Money in the Bank September this year. So after SummerSlam.
Yeah. Really?
That's so, after, so between Backlash and SummerSlam, we have two-ish pay-per-views, Clash in Italy late May, Night of Champions late June.
Yeah, and Night of Champions is right up in the air. Well, I know we'll get to that news and notes. And I know that's coming up.
So
a lot of things going on in that part of the world.
So top of the card, WWE, we know Roman will defend at Backlash. Cody will defend somewhere. Who drops the title first?
Whenever his eye's healthy.
So. Cody or Roman, who's going to drop the title first?
I think it's Cody.
Okay.
I think it's Cody, because I think they're going to ride Roman out. I mean, again, I don't know if Roman's run ends with losing to Oba at SummerSlam. But, you know, Roman saying that he's going to be around a lot this summer makes me think he's going to be around quite a bit all the way up to SummerSlam. And I think you have to put on a championship. You have to put a championship on Oba by then. I think it's going to be tough for them to continue to tread water without him going after a world championship until then.
So, again,
Backlash is coming up. You got Night of Champions. And then you've got some runway there for Oba to make a run at the world championship. So, and that's the one that makes the most sense to me. You got to put a strap a rock on the back of this kid and see if he can sink.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's Oba at SummerSlam. Where, I mean, Cody to Orton should be something, but when and where is that happening?
Well, I think that's dead.
Really?
It seems like it's dead because they teased Punk and Cody.
But what was the point of the post-match angle then?
It seems like, based on some of the things that I've seen, again, we thought that we were going to get at Backlash the tag team match. Cody, Jelly Roll, and Randy, and Pat McAfee. And it seems like, again, shocker of all shockers, that Pat, again, wasn't great as a heel, didn't like the heat that was coming in from that, so decided to eject himself. Right. So once he decided, nope, I'm not doing this anymore, then that eliminates the next angle. Randy doesn't win. And we haven't seen Randy. It's not like we've seen Randy since. Right. And so I think the chance of Randy beating Cody is done. I think maybe they put it on Punk, or maybe they just take this thing all the way. Maybe it ends up being Roman dropping it at SummerSlam to Oba, or maybe they do it with Cody and Oba. I don't know. But it just feels like, because again, Cody dropped it before Mania, seemed like they were ready to have him drop it again. I lean towards Cody, but maybe because of this injury, he's not going to be wrestling at Backlash. Who the hell? And then do they run back Cody versus Roman at Night of Champions for that big ass championship that they have over there? I don't need to see that again, but
that I didn't think about again, that. Isn't that usually champ versus champ?
Yeah, because that's because that used to happen every year at Survivor Series when they used to do SmackDown Raw, and now they've kind of gone away from that. So when they do champ versus champ, that's been a clash or Night of Champions the last couple.
I just feel like Cody Punk is Mania, like it's them planting the seed and say, hey, look, long term storytelling, we're going to do it over a year. But I say that with having no clue who the dance partner for Cody is at any point over the next few months.
Well, again, I think he doesn't have a dance partner until that eye gets healthy, which again, pretty nasty injury. So that buys them a little bit of time where he can kind of come out and just tread water the way he did this past Friday.
But even SummerSlam, like I know we're 4 months away, but it's two nights. So if you have Roman Oba main eventing one night, Cody and someone needs to main event the other night.
I'm not sure.
It's just a weird spot right now. And I agree with what you said about the summer thing. Like, I feel like Roman saying, hey, I'm here through the summer, I'm pushing hard. Like, he does it for 3-4 months. And like, okay, I did my everyday thing and now I'm out.
Yeah. And then he can go back to, because again, the fall is kind of the downtime for WWE. And, you know, the push for the Royal Rumble probably starts mid to late December. Yeah. You know, so he pops up every once in a while then, but yeah, I think Roman's dropping it at SummerSlam. So maybe I've talked myself into changing my answer and going to Roman, because I don't know what the hell's going to happen with Cody Rhodes. Cause they don't know. They have to pivot. And again, maybe the injury ends up being a little fortunate from a storytelling perspective, cause now they have time to try to figure out, but whatever they had mapped out for Cody seems to have gotten blown up.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's Roman just almost by the math of it, where Cody might only defend it two more times this year because there's no one to defend it against. Like, they don't have main eventers on SmackDown to say, all right, you're next. Like, you've squashed Drew. You move Fatu over to Raw now. And the main event scene after that is open.
Yikes.
Like, Orton and yikes. He's not going to do that again. Punk's on Raw. There's no other main eventers on that show.
Sammy's tied up with Trick.
You're squashing Solo. Like, that main event run is over.
Yeah.
It is rough.
I mean, it seems like Tala Tonga, whatever they're calling him, was absent of the beatdown on Friday that Jacob gave them. So maybe they're trying to save him for some sort of push, but I don't think you're going to be able to do that in four months. Like, he's been around long enough where he doesn't have that same... Yeah, he's a big dude, but he doesn't have the same aura as Oba.
No, he's a good house show main event. Like, it's Cody versus this really tall guy for the title. Like, oh, that's interesting. Like, Cody gets his stuff in, gets the win, and everyone goes home happy. But they don't have house shows, and I guess that's why we have these international pay-per-views to basically be house shows on television that we pay to watch.
Yeah. I guess it is Roman. I just assumed Cody, because again, he dropped it. Looked like they were ready to have him drop it at Mania. They didn't do it. But I guess it's Roman, because again, it feels like there's more of a plan right there. Where Cody, it's up in the air and who the hell knows. But because even if, let's say Cody's not healthy enough and suffers some sort of setback. I don't know how you would do that with an orbital injury, but let's just say something goes wrong and he vacates the title. Who's world champion?
I don't think there's an answer, and I think that's why he has the belt. I think it's the Roman schedule of, oh, we'll just defend it, you know, four times a year and call it a day. You set the precedent, that's okay.
Well, because again,
there's no one else.
It felt like it was going to be Randy, and maybe they just go back to giving it to Randy if that were to happen. Again, I don't think that's what does happen, because I think Cody's going to be healthy-ish enough, especially not having to wrestle the next PLE, but... Like, in the instance that somebody, you know, or if he's just wrestling a match and has an unfortunate injury and has to miss 4 months, like, who's the guy? Like, again, when this happened with Seth Rollins, it's pretty, CM Punk. CM Punk steps up and again ends up having all these great matches in the run up to WrestleMania. But I don't know who that person is right now over on SmackDown.
The only other thing I think of is somehow Braun beats Rollins and then you find a way to get him to SmackDown. And then SummerSlam is literally the changing of the guard of Oba and Braun are your world champions.
Ooh. God, can we do... See, because then I want to see that at Night of Champions.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like that would be a fun. That would be a fun. Right. You know, like I want to see that at Night of Champions. Like that would be better than whatever right. They're ultimately going to end up with. Like, I mean, if you could do that, I think that would make a ton of sense. And then technically, Cody would be the one to drop his belt first because Cody would be main eventing night one. Roman would be main eventing.
So
night
there you two. Go. So maybe that's an option, but they seem stuck right now.
Because Braun's ready.
Yes.
Like, Braun has to beat Seth.
Has to. Like, I don't think there's any other option there. Like, you have to have him win, and the match needs to be respectable. Like, it doesn't need to be a five-star match. Just be good. And then you're like, all right, Here are the keys to the car. Go.
Or is having both of those guys be your champs, Oba? Because I... Not that they are Goldberg. But I feel there's a Goldberg-esque element to both of them in that they're both better served on shorter matches where they just look really strong, right? Like, I don't think it serves either one of them, even if they can go for 15 minutes. I don't think they're better. I don't think that serves them well, anybody else well. Like, it's just not going to... I think it's better if you do it kind of quick. You get in these big, powerful moves. Again... Bella versus Brock wasn't some seven-star match, but it was awesome. It was cool. And I think having those quicker matches for both of them where they're a little more high-octane, quick hitting is better for both of them. And I don't know if that makes both of your champions too similar, but I'm not sure. But again, I think it would be great if that's the direction they did, because we have talked about for years on this show about, man, that roster over there, it's getting a little old. And we continue to have, you know, Roman, he's a 40-plus champion, taking it from a 40-plus champion in CM Punk. Cody, 40 years old, wrestling a 40-plus-year-old in the other main event. So to have Oba and Braun, and if those end up being the flag bearers coming out for their respective brands coming out of SummerSlam, I think that would be
And also that allows, if you're TKO, it's like, hey, more ad space and more this and that. Like, if you don't need to allot all the wrestling time for the main eventer, it's like, all right, we can use it for something else now.
God, I hate your corporate brain. I hate that you just said that. Now I don't want either one of them to be champion. Oh man, I didn't think of that. No, you did. But I'm not saying you're wrong. I just hate you for pointing it out and not making me realize it. That's now I'm
mad. WWE world we live in.
Yeah, that's unfortunately where we are. What do we got at news and notes this week, Brian?
We talked about Night of Champions as of now scheduled for June 27th in Saudi Arabia. Well, Nick Khan told staff at TKO Town Hall that WWE is, quote, monitoring the situation in the Middle East. He said that WWE would only run Night of Champions in Saudi Arabia, not holding surrounding Raws and SmackDowns. Quote, we're only going if it's safe or if we're allowed there. We are monitoring with our heads of security internally and with our government affairs folks externally the situation there. If U.S. citizens are allowed in at this moment in time, it is declared and deemed safe, we'll all be going there.
Yeah, I mean, the good news for them is it doesn't seem like the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is going to be pulling money the way they are from their golf league. So it seems like they're interested in having them there. And that's probably because it's an entertainment aspect that they get to have in the country versus, you know, the golf that's being played all over the world. Not shocking. WWE wants that check, and they will wait as long as possible to pull the plug on Night of Champions. And my guess is if it doesn't happen in Saudi, it's probably just not happening, because I don't know if you can just go, oh, we're going to have it here instead, and then probably have a lackluster crowd because it happened so fast. People just, again, you got a lot of stuff going on during the summer, and you got to plan pretty far ahead, you know, if you're going to have an open Saturday or Sunday night, I think, to kind of fill an arena. So if it doesn't happen in Saudi, my guess is it doesn't happen.
That is an interesting way, because, yeah, I feel like they're going to push it as much as possible, like right up until, like, all right, we're good to go now. I feel like this is something they put a lot of stake into. I guess they could just punt on it and no one would care that much. But
No, I mean, it's not like they do any actual, it's Night of Champions, but it's like champion versus right. champion. It's not like titles are on the line. And if you wanted to do that, just have a main event on Netflix on Monday Night Raw.
How about NXT PLEs? It was announced this week they will be on the CW network moving forward. And we've now found out that CW Sports will be streamed as a part of the ESPN Unlimited app moving forward. The next NXT PLE will be the Great American Bash this upcoming summer.
So ESPN app's got them all now. Much like Peacock used to have them all, now ESPN app has all of the pay-per-views, which is just kind of weird because, like, I guess I so when I first moved into my house, one of the first things I did, because I use YouTube TV, and one thing that has always frustrated me when I'm ever watching something on YouTube TV, like a Packers game. Packers games are huge here. Like, I'm too far behind. Right. I'm getting texts right before something happens because, you know, the cable box. So I bought an antenna.
Oh.
Like, it was like $20 on Amazon. So I just watch all the Packer games are aired over the air. So that way I stay. And with that, I have, turns out, all these other channels that I can flip through. The CW is one of them, Brian. And so I guess this is just a weird one to me that people wouldn't just have a $20 antenna that gives them access to the CW and all these other things. But I guess, hey, now it's part of the library. You can go back watching and whatever you want to do.
What, Live Golf, ACC football? Isn't that?
No, Live Golf is part of Fox. Okay.
What else? Is that women's of wrestling?
Well, for as long as Live Golf exists.
Is WOW on CW? I feel like I DVR it, but I don't know if I've ever actually watched the full episode. I think that's on CW.
Yeah, but I think it's only on like select CWs. It might be on... Because, like, I think Sinclair has something to do with WOW and the distribution, so it's whatever channels they own. So maybe it's CW in your area. It might not be CW in everybody else's area.
Finally, news and notes. We talked about the Cody eye injury. Well, he says he was ready to become an eye patch guy. He said he went to Raw. He went to Triple H, said, hey, I'm going to do an eye patch thing. I thought that'd be cool. Wrestlers are always looking for something. Let's get a new action figure out of it. Eye patch Cody. Triple H told him, quote, absolutely not. And there might be a shot on Unreal of me throwing the eye patch down backstage because I had it. I was ready to go.
Yeah, I think that's for the best. like you can be dashing Cody Rhodes when you're not in the main event, when you're not the world champion, and you know you can have the face mask and doing all those things. But having the eye patch is the world champ. Like, you don't need the gimmick. You're the world champ. And it's not even like you're a new world champ. No, you've been a world champ for a long time in WWE.
I think it's the action figure thing. I feel like I've heard Jericho tell a story where, like, if you plan an outfit change enough in advance or in a certain window, you get another action figure out of it. Where it's like, oh, I wore these tights for 4 months, so we got to make an action figure out of it. And now all of a sudden you have another one. So I feel like he just wanted an eye patch Cody action figure. And that's what it came down to.
Ah, just sell it as an accessory, right? Like, just if you really want to, it doesn't have to be an old brand new one, right?
Gotta make that money.
All right. What did you have for your matches of
I think the obvious of the open and the close to Dynamite last night.
Open and close, open and close last night.
MJF, Kevin Knight, Darby and Brody. Like, I love Darby as world champion. I know it's like what we're doing with Orange was the champion, but every single week, every match is a banger.
Yeah, but like, I'm worried about him. Like, he said he's going to drive this thing to the wheels fall off. That could be any given
that
week.
That is accurate.
With the way he throws himself around, and then he's going up against Brody King.
That dive last night, where it literally looked like he hit a wall, and Brody just bounced, like, that was unbelievable.
Again, thankful for it. A little worried about him. Kind of worried about him, which is why Darby cannot be a long-term champ. Like, you just, whatever this ends up being, him losing a Double or Nothing, I think is going to be perfect. We already talked about the MJF aspect. I also really enjoyed the Bayley and Lyra versus Judgment Day women's tag team match. That was from Raw on Monday. I thought that was
nice. I enjoyed Becky and Io from Monday night, despite the WWE finish with Asuka getting involved. But they gave them some time to work. They worked through a commercial break. So it was fun up until the finish.
Yeah, but SmackDown was kind of meh. Thank God that thing's going back to 2 hours.
We're almost there. And then also I would throw in the Braun promo from Raw. Like, the way he stood toe-to-toe, and even the delivery of the line of you're the best wrestler, and then waiting at being number two. Like, whoa, I took a shot there. And then even Rollins playing into the Steiner thing. Like, I thought that was an unbelievable back and forth between those two.
Well, and again, Seth is one of the stronger promos, right? He's been, as he mentioned, he's been around for 14 years. To stand toe-to-toe for a guy who hasn't been the strongest on the mic and had to be folded into the group with Seth and Heyman, and for Heyman not to say a word. Like, for Heyman to just immediately hand off the microphone, not even just, like, put it on a tee for him, just to, here you go, kid, and he knocked it out.
I did love how Heyman sold getting hit with the microphone, though. Like, he had been shot when Rollins flipped it from the other. That was very amusing.
Yeah, that's Heyman, though. Yeah, guy knows what he's doing. It's not his first rodeo. But yes, that promo, probably the promo of the week.
100%.
For sure. Because the way that started off on Monday Night Raw. All right, we still got a lot of pro wrestling to get into. If you happen to miss anything from WrestleMania, any of our interviews, we've got them all posted. YouTube.com/ActiveKarmaWrestling. Please comment, subscribe, check it all out. All the great content we've got up there. All of our past shows, if you want to check those out as well. But we'll be back here with another show next week on GKW.